I'm at the mercy of my elders. You know, the elders said go fish, they're going to go fish, and so they're fishing.
Subsistence fishermen protest closures on the Kuskokwim River. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, June 20th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the Alaska Sea Life Center rescues its first whale.
She made a lot of clicks and whistles and everything, and was clearly in distress.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority supports a statewide system of care for people with mental illness, developmental disabilities, chronic alcoholism and substance abuse, Alzheimer's, and traumatic brain injury. You probably know a trust beneficiary, a family member, friend, coworker, neighbor, maybe you. Learn more at mhtrust.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, here for all Alaskans.
Subsistence fishing for king salmon is happening on the Kuskokwim River to protest the closures currently in place. KYUK's Angela Denning Barnes reports from Bethel.
Several villages and dozens of boats participated. Yupik tribal elders have been meeting with village fishers and telling them that they should fish for their families. A handful of tribes put out resolutions saying they have the right to fish as sovereign governments. The village of Nebusquiac sent theirs all the way to D.C. to Ken Salazar, the U.S. Secretary of the Interior. That village had about a dozen boats out in the water this afternoon. In Akiak, about 30 miles upriver of Bethel, the peaceful fishing protest turned to war, as one resident put it. Wildlife law enforcement officials arrived in boat and sighted three fishers and seized their nets.
Soon as I said, you know, troopers were waiting right there.
Sam Jackson was one of those fishers. He was reached by cell phone in his boat.
What I told him, you know, is we're not protest fishing. We're fishing for our people. But they would not budge.
Jackson says one of the nets was cut up in front of the fisher. The community responded in force. Women and children filled boats and drifted alongside fishers supporting their efforts. They held up signs that read, "Feed your families, go fish." Sheila Williams, Akiak's tribal administrator, talked with the officers.
I spoke with them at length. They were asking us to hold off. I said, at the directive of the elders, they're going to go fishing. I'm at the mercy of my elders. You know, the elders said, go fish, they're going to go fish, and so they're fishing.
A law enforcement float plane attempted to land near Akiak, but Jackson said there were too many boats and they flew off. Residents were not sure if they would return, but fishers continued to fish anyway. The Kuskokwim River has been closed to fishing for over a week in some areas. Fish managers say they plan to open fishing for 3 days, starting on Friday for the lowest part of the river, and then they will close it again for an unspecified amount of time. In Bethel, I'm Angela Denning Barnes.
The Alaska Sea Life Center in Seward is caring for its first whale. The newborn beluga calf turned up in Naknek Bay yesterday. Center staff flew to Naknek to rescue it. APRN's Wendy Johnson reports.
Shannon Ford and Don Ward, two commercial fishermen in Naknek, were driving from the local cannery to their fish camp just after a windstorm on Monday afternoon when the tide was changing. They noticed an eagle and pulled over to get a closer look. That's when they noticed the slightly dried baby beluga whale in the surf. Though Ford has seen many beluga whales in the bay where she fishes, she describes seeing the baby as a once-in-a-lifetime experience.
They're such appealing creatures, and they look like they have a little smile. And she also was very vocal. She made a lot of clicks and whistles and everything, and was clearly in distress. And it just really is very emotional to see a creature like that that just wants its mother. You know, it still had part of the umbilical cord.
The two made several attempts to persuade the calf, which turned out to be male, to swim away into open water. But it became obvious that the calf was confused after it continued to swim back to the shore toward them. That's when Ford called the Alaska Sea Life Center to help. Tara Reamer Jones, president of the Alaska Sea Life Center, thinks the windstorm played a role in the calf's confusion.
From what we can tell, it's possible that the birth happened during the storm, so it's not terribly surprising that, you know, things might have gotten confused, but this isn't something that seems to happen very frequently at all.
Ford and Ward, along with plenty of neighbors, kept the calf safe and wet while the Alaska Sea Life Center obtained a plane to transport the calf from the bay to Seward. Three of their staff members boarded the plane and flew to South Neck to help. Some regularly scheduled flights needed to be delayed to make room on the airstrip for the aircraft, but Jones says that wasn't a problem.
Grant Aviation had flights that were departing out of Homer and Kenai that were both delayed because of this animal. And from what we were told by them, their customers who were waiting for those flights were very happy and excited that they had a part in helping rescue this animal. Everyone made their connections, and so it was good all around.
The 2 or 3 day old calf successfully traveled to the Sea Life Center. Staff there are now tube feeding the animal a special milk formula specifically designed for belugas until it can learn to suckle on its own. Other than that, Jones says that the calf appears to be healthy.
It's almost 5 feet long and weighs about 110 pounds, and it's kind of like a little gray butterball. They don't get to be that bright white that people are used to seeing in adults until they're several years old. And it's been swimming around the pool and making some of its vocalizations as it comes up to breathe as well.
The Alaska Sea Life Center will hold the calf until the National Marine Fisheries Service finds it a permanent home in one of the country's 7 aquariums capable of holding a beluga. As of now, the calf is unnamed, but Jones plans to start working on that soon. In Anchorage, I'm Wendy Jonathan.
Hillcorp Energy is a new player in Alaska's oil and gas industry. The little-known private company has big plans for Cook Inlet oil and gas production, and it may play a role in giving a boost to Alaska's slumping oil service industry. Hillcorp President Greg Lolliker outlined some of the company's goals in Alaska at a talk before the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce on Monday. KSKA's Ellen Lockyer has more.
Hillcorp operates 250 oil fields nationally with more than 360 wells. It is the largest oil producer in Louisiana and now claims Alaska as its second largest operation. The company's reserves are about half oil and half gas, although Hillcorp is eyeing oil projects due to the declining price of natural gas, according to company president Greg Lolliker. He says Hillcorp purchased Chevron's leases in Cook Inlet last year in line with the company's policy of acquiring old oil fields, especially those let go by the major producers.
We get out there and start chasing those opportunities that the other companies didn't want to chase for whatever reason, just wasn't economic enough, wasn't big enough, wasn't attractive enough for the large company. We start chasing those. And again, over the last 5 years, we spent about $1.7 billion on exploiting the properties that we own.
Lolliker said Hillcorp plans to spend $200 million in Alaska this year on its efforts to enhance the value of old operations in Cook Inlet. The company has 10 platforms in the inlet.
Most of them have drilling rigs on them, or had drilling rigs on them, that were built in the 1960s, which were basically junk. And so the first thing we've been doing is stripping the old rigs off there and working on, you know, getting a rig, a platform-based rig that we can move up here and move from platform to platform to start drilling and working on some of these wells.
He says lining up people and equipment to fix the broken facilities is the company's immediate focus. Lolliker says further exploration and drilling will come later. Hillcorp's biggest obstacle so far in Alaska? Lolliker says the lack of oil field support services. He says the right people and equipment don't exist here, or they are committed to other projects. Hillcorp's external affairs manager, Lori Nelson, says Hillcorp can help spur Alaska's oil field service industry.
The folks that had the acquisitions to date have basically been boiling operations down, and now that we're here to ramp it back up and increase production, those folks that were local to the area, those local providers, have taken their operations elsewhere or shut their doors. I mean, I've run into a number of entities that have moved their equipment to North Dakota, and that's the type of thing. The service and support industry, we're just trying to get the message out there that we are here for the long haul and we want to be able to provide them a steady business flow.
Nelson says most of the company's 265 employees are local workers. According to Nelson, Hilcorp's production focus could be 50-50 oil and gas in the inlet.
We'll take both, especially noting the climate that we're in with South Central and being the main energy provider for our utilities. We certainly recognize the importance on gas, and we are focused on it. But as far as new exploration, either one's good for us.
Lalliker says Alaska's oil tax regime did not influence Hilcorp's decision to invest. He says that the company is here to make money producing oil and gas, not to modify the fiscal regime. The company's decision to make use of the Drift River tank farm at the base of Redoubt Volcano has been criticized by environmentalists as a bad one. Lalliker says the tank farm on the west side of Cook Inlet was part of the original Unocal Chevron infrastructure. He says it is the logical choice for shipping oil from the west to the east side of Cook Inlet. As far as future operations, Lalliker says Hilcorp has no plans to expand to the North Slope in the short term, but is not excluding long-term plans. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Anchorage dedicates a new memorial for Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
Over the years, I have seen this community grow together, which is basically Dr. King's dream.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
For thousands of years, the coastal residents of Arctic Alaska have depended on the polar bear for sustenance, utilitarian, and spiritual purposes. The Alaska Nanook Commission was formed to ensure that current and future Alaska Native subsistence hunters will be able to continue to harvest this important resource. The Alaska Nanook Commission, along with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, would like to hear from subsistence polar bear hunters. Learn more at AlaskaNanookCommission.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Nanook Commission.
A legal dispute between the Fairbanks North Star Borough and 2010 U.S. Senate candidate Joe Miller has been resolved. The borough and former mayor Jim Whitaker have submitted to a judgment against them and agreed to pay Miller $5,000. The case revolves around Miller's past employment as a part-time borough attorney. Miller's lawyer John Temison says the case uncovered borough mishandling of personnel information.
There were a series of leaks of information related to Mr. Miller's tenure at the borough and information that was contained in his personnel file that he wasn't even aware of.
Temison says the case confirmed a meeting between former Mayor Whitaker and borough attorney Renee Broker to discuss Miller's personnel issues. Those included discipline for use of borough computers to vote in a political poll, information Temison claims Whitaker leaked to media. Current Mayor Luke Hopkins says there's nothing to the allegations.
The borough has strong personnel policies, strong regulations on what is public information and what is not, and we protected that. So all along, there was no secrecy. There was no transgression. I think we held to our standards.
Hopkins says he believes it was in the borough's best interest to end the drawn-out suit for a low dollar amount. Hopkins calls the offer of judgment a compromise and not an admission of fault, but the Miller camp says it's just like any other judgment assigning liability and damages. Joe Miller says the case was about setting the record straight, not money, and he feels some level of vindication, but the judgment is not the jumping-off point for another political run. A past member of the Alaska Peacemakers Militia says this week's conviction of leader Schaefer Cox and two group members is a sign of eroding freedom. Cox and Lonnie Vernon were found guilty Tuesday of plotting to kill government officials and having illegal weapons. A third militiaman, Coleman Barney, was solely convicted of weapons violations. Former Fairbanks Militia Sergeant Gary Brockman says the guilty verdicts confirm government overreach.
The federal government is eroding our constitutional rights as citizens of a free nation. If it doesn't fit their agenda, they enact a new law that will override constitutional rights.
Brockman says the verdict treads over our rights to free speech and to take up arms. Brockman says he was not involved in the militia when informants infiltrated the group and recorded conversations about retaliating against government officials. He says the Fairbanks militia was never the citizen army Cox portrayed, but the larger movement remains alive in Alaska.
Well, I don't think the way that things played out with Schaefer is going to make any difference. I think if you do some nosing around, you will find that there are 3,500 men in Alaska who are ready, but not under Schaefer's command. That was a little blowhard kind of exaggeration that he used.
Brockman says any ongoing militia groups will likely be keeping a low profile, and there are too many eyes on him to consider participation. Wrangell voters have recalled 8 of 9 members on the city-owned hospital's board of directors. More than 600 voters turned out to the polls for the June 19th special election. The group pushing for the recall says the board members violated purchasing rules and mishandled a vote over revoking a doctor's privileges, among other complaints. KSTK's Charlotte Duran reports.
$3.99, yes. $2.26. No.
Now it's time to get down to business and get a new board seated and start working on getting our new hospital and long-term care built in a financially responsible manner.
That's Laura Szilard, one of the Vote Yes recall supporters, celebrating outside the Nolan Center Tuesday evening. Unofficial results from the June 19th special election show 8 of 9 Wrangell Medical Center board members recalled from their elected positions.
Well, this is an unusual circumstance, and it's not one that I've seen, obviously, in Wrangell or really any other place in terms of the number of board persons being recalled.
Wrangell Mayor Jeremy Maxson says a major concern is how the recall might affect the town's new hospital project. He says the city manager is in Washington, D.C. this week, meeting with Senators Lisa Murkowski and Mark Begich to brief them on the recall and make sure the project moves forward.
We will be bringing every resource we have to bear to make sure that the USDA fulfills its commitment to the city and borough to issue a revenue bond, and that we move as quickly as we can with getting the new hospital constructed.
Maxson says the next step in the election process is canvassing absentee ballots and certifying election results. He says if the vote count remains the same, the borough assembly will get guidance at its next regular meeting from the municipal attorney on what steps should be taken to fill the hospital board vacancies. Receiving the most yes votes to be recalled is hospital board member Linda Berge. She says despite the results, she's glad the election is over and hopes the community will be able to move forward.
I just hope that the town settles down now and quits their, you know, feuding back and forth and you know, the name calling and the whatnot. I wish we'd get back to being just a good community. And I wish them well. Hope that they can do good things.
Unofficial results from the recall election show all 8 hospital board members on the ballot recalled from their positions. Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Charlotte Duran.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. The Alaska Department of Health and Social Services has over 70 job openings available statewide in nursing, social work, and child protection. There's nothing more important than protecting the health and well-being of Alaska families, so take the first step towards a meaningful career. Visit dhss.alaska.gov and click on Careers. Join their team and make a difference every day. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Anchorage residents celebrated the renovation today of a downtown memorial to Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. The new memorial contains a laser-etched granite image of Dr. King that can be seen from one of the city's main thoroughfares. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has more.
Around 100 residents watched as dignitaries cut the ribbon on the newly renovated memorial on the west end of the Delaney Park Strip. The improved memorial contains new interpretive signs, a better walkway, and a donor wall. But the big new addition is a granite image of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. that can be seen from the busy road nearby. Former Anchorage Mayor Rick Maestrom was on the committee which raised funds for the renovation. He said the city was making a statement by improving the memorial.
I love the fact that it's facing L Street, which has about 40,000 cars a day going past it.
And the only disadvantage of this location before is it wasn't as public. And now it's much more public, and we're making a statement about the people of Anchorage and our community.
In the 90s, volunteers raised more than $250,000 to build the original memorial, but it became run down. In 2010, the Anchorage Park Foundation secured a $150,000 legislative grant to carry out the renovation. In addition, the Park Foundation raised $80,000 from individual and corporate donors. Senator Betty Davis also spoke at the ceremony. She said the more public renovation of the memorial was critical to passing on the values that King stood for to future generations in Anchorage.
We have to make sure that our children understand what their past was. We don't have to live in the past. We need to look to the future. Any nation or any person that do not know their past history is doomed for failure. And we must do everything that we can. And that's not just for black kids. It's for all kids. As Dr. Martin Luther King said, black, white, yellow, brown, whatever the color might be.
Cal Williams arrived in Anchorage from the segregated South in 1965. He says the memorial is a sign that Anchorage is changing.
Over the years, I have seen this community grow together, and which is basically Dr. King's dream. Now we have a great collection of people from around the world. We have people from the Vietnam, we have Hmongs, Filipinos at my church, Samoans. So it's a great melting pot. It is indeed the rainbow that Dr. King dreamed of and envisioned. Anchorage can show the way that people of all races, all colors, and all economic backgrounds can indeed get along well together.
Natalie Bunton with Shiloh Baptist Church closed the ceremony with a song called We've Come This Far by Faith.
By faith, leaning on the Lord, trusting in His holy word, He's never failed me yet. Oh, can't turn around. We've come this far by faith.
In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Alaska isn't home to a large number of non-native bugs and weeds, but as KUAC's Emily Schwing reports, those that are here are beginning to cause some serious problems.
If you drive north of the University of Alaska Fairbanks, you'll notice a little purple flower creeping through the ditch alongside the road. It's called bird vetch. Trish Wirtz is an invasive plant program manager with the U.S. Forest Service. She says even though bird vetch isn't native to Alaska, it's more than likely here to stay.
Usually it's growing mixed in with other vegetation, so it's very hard to weed whack and mow. I have two small infestations on my property, and I've been pulling them for at least 10 years. And I know I've kept it in check, but I haven't eliminated it. So it's really incorporating itself into Alaska forests. And yeah, it won't be possible to get rid of that.
Bird vetch was introduced at the UAF experimental farm in the 1940s as a potential plant for forage, but it never caught on. Wirtz says its spread didn't become noticeable until about 10 years ago.
We don't know if that's a result of climate change or just suddenly there becomes a certain level of it in the landscape that people start to notice. But it's definitely, now it's spreading quickly, both in the Fairbanks area and the Mat-Su.
The infestation of an aquatic plant south of Fairbanks has Wirtz even more concerned.
It spreads very quickly. It makes a dense monoculture. The same species has spread all the way across Europe from Scotland to Lake Baikal.
It's called Elodia. It's green and leafy, and Wirtz says although it's pretty nondescript, it can wreak havoc.
When it's growing densely, particularly in lakes, but also in slow-moving waterways, can completely fill the basin, prevent any kind of recreational activity like boating, definitely makes fishing impossible. You just can't draw a line through the water.
In 2010, Elodia was found along a 16-kilometer stretch of Chena Slough in North Pole. It's also been identified in Chena Lakes and in a few spots along the Chena River.
Almost for certain that the infestation in Chena Slough and Chena Lake were brought there by people releasing the contents of a fish aquarium. And the manager at Chena Slough or at Chena Lakes told us that he has seen goldfish swimming in Chena Lake as well.
But plants aren't the only invasive species.
5 or 10 years ago, people in South Central Alaska noticed alder stands, entire alder stands, being defoliated. There was an insect eating the leaves.
Scientists sent samples of a small insect to the Smithsonian for identification. It turned out to be the green alder sawfly.
It's native to southern Europe and North Africa. The pupae overwinter in rotting wood. We believe it was brought to Alaska from Europe, either in cargo, in wood material that's used to protect cargo or pallets, or possibly in firewood.
Despite the influx, Wirt says Alaska has far fewer invasive species than most other places on the planet. She says continuing education and more comprehensive management are the only ways to slow and maybe even stop their spread. In Fairbanks, I'm Emily Schwing.
A state contractor demolished an historic cabin along the Dalton Highway near Wiseman. Alaska Department of Transportation Northern Region Environmental Manager Bruce Campbell says the state had record of the small trapper-style cabin, but the information didn't transfer to the road reconstruction project.
2 years ago, the cabin was flagged, marked, protected. New project, new staff, new contractor, and they didn't know about the existence of the cabin, and they... Day one of the project, March 1st, the contractor sub shows up to remove the trees and brush in the along the edge of the highway and takes the cabin out with it.
Campbell says the structure was reduced to mulch. The state isn't clear about the cabin's history, but longtime Wiseman resident and tour guide Jack Rakoff is.
That cabin was a trail cabin that was built by the Federal Road Commission.
Rakoff dates what he calls the Gold Creek Cabin back to the 1920s, built on a trail that accessed area mining claims.
I'm not real super happy that it was somehow fell through the cracks, that this was a historical cabin.
The DOT's Campbell says the cabin does not show up on Road Commission records, but the state wants to provide some sort of compensation for its loss. One possibility is building a replica of the cabin, but Wiseman Museum operator Jim Lonsberry favors a more practical local tourism need, an outhouse.
One that you could pump and it looked nice, attractive, and on the edge of Wiseman because there is a lot of traffic comes in there and they have no facilities for these folks.
The DOT is planning a meeting for next month in Wiseman to talk about the demolished cabin with local residents. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Angela Denning Barnes in Bethel, Ellen Lockyer and Daisha Eaton in Anchorage, Dan Bross and Emily Schwing in Fairbanks, and Charlotte Duran in Wrangell. APRN's Wendy Jonathan reported from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska, providing quality health plans to companies and individuals in Alaska for over 60 years. More at primera.com. Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. We know the territory.
And by
GrantStation, your fast track to funding, helping identify appropriate grant makers for your organization's programs and projects. On the web at grantstation.com. Someone you know is likely a trust beneficiary, a family member, friend, coworker, neighbor, maybe you. The Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority supports a statewide system of care for people with mental illness, developmental disabilities, chronic alcoholism and substance abuse, Alzheimer's, and traumatic brain injury. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, here for all Alaskans, mhtrust.org.
Alaska Housing Finance Corporation offers home choice seminars that provide tools for making informed decisions about purchasing and financing a home and loans tailored for first-time home buyers. There's more information at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.